Everyone return to their homes immediately. There are rebels on the loose. They are armed and ready to fire. The loudspeakers sound around the streets, drawing attention to our bodies huddled together in the narrow alley. A few people see us and scream. Boots are getting louder. Gunshots are getting wilder. I take a moment to analyze the surrounding buildings and realize we're not in a settled compound. The street James lives on is an unregulated turf, a series of abandoned office buildings crammed together, leftovers from our old lives. I don't understand why he's not living in a compound like the rest of the population. I don't have time to figure out why I only see two age groups represented. Why the elderly and the orphaned are the only residents. Why they've been dumped on illegal land with soldiers who are not supposed to be here. I'm afraid to consider the answers to my own questions, and in a panicked moment, I fear for James's life. I spin around as we run, glimpsing his small body bundled in Adam's arms. His eyes are squeezed shut so tight, I'm sure it hurts. Adam swears under his breath. He kicks down the first door we can find of a deserted building and yells for us to follow him inside.
"I need you to stay here," he says to Kenji. "And I'm out of my mind, but I need to leave James with you. I need you to watch out for him. They're looking for Juliet, and they're looking for me. They won't even expect to find you two."
"What are you going to do?" Kenji asks.
"I need to steal a car. Then I'll come back for you."
James doesn't even protest as Adam puts him down. His little lips are white, his eyes wide, his hands trembling.
"I'll come back for you, James," Adam says again. "I promise."
James nods over and over and over again. Adam kisses his head, once, hard, fast, drops our duffel bags on the floor, turns to Kenji.
"If you let anything happen to him, I will kill you."
Kenji doesn't laugh. He doesn't scowl. He takes a deep breath.
"I'll take care of him. Juliet?"
He takes my hand, and we disappear into the streets. Chapter 38. The roads are packed with pedestrians trying to escape. Adam and I hide our guns in the waistbands of our pants, but our wild eyes and jerky movements seem to give us away. Everyone stays away from us, darting in opposite directions, some squeaking, shouting, crying, dropping the things in their hands. But for all the people, I don't see a single car in sight. They must be hard to come by, especially in this area. Adam pushes me to the ground just as a bullet flies past my head. He shoots down another door and we run through the ruins toward another exit, trapped in the maze of what used to be a clothing store. Gunshots and footsteps are close behind. There must be at least 100 soldiers following us through these streets, clustered in different groups, dispersed in different areas of the city, ready to capture and kill. But I know they won't kill me. It's Adam I'm worried about. I try to stay as close as possible to his body because I'm certain Warner has given them orders to bring me back alive. My efforts, however, are weak at best. Adam has enough height and muscle to dwarf me. Anyone with an excellent shot would be able to target him. They could shoot him right in the head, right in front of me. He turns to fire two shots. One falls short. Another elicits a strangled cry. We're still running. Adam doesn't say anything. He doesn't tell me to be brave. He doesn't ask me if I'm okay, if I'm scared. He doesn't offer me encouragement or assure me that we'll be just fine. He doesn't tell me to leave him behind and save myself. He doesn't tell me to watch his brother in case he dies. He doesn't need to. We both understand the reality of our situation. Adam could be shot right now. I could be captured at any moment. This entire building might suddenly explode. Someone could have discovered Kenji and James. We might all die today. The facts are obvious. But we know we need to take the chance just the same. Because moving forward is the only way to survive. The gun is growing slick in my hands, but I hold on to it anyway. My legs are screaming against the pain, but I push them faster anyway. My lungs are sawing my ribcage in half, but I force them to process oxygen anyway. I have to keep moving. There is no time for human deficiencies. The fire escape in this building is nearly impossible to find. Our feet pound the tiled floors, our hands searching through the bleak light for some kind of outlet, some kind of access to the streets. This building is larger than we anticipated, massive, with hundreds of possible directions. I realize it must have been a warehouse, and not just a store. Adam ducks behind an abandoned desk, pulling me down with him.
"Don't be stupid, Kent. You can only run for so long,"
someone shouts. The voice isn't more than 10 feet away. Adam swallows, clenches his jaw. The people trying to kill him are the same ones he used to eat lunch with, train with, live with. He knows these guys. I wonder if that knowledge makes this worse.
"Just give us the girl," a new voice adds. "Just give us the girl and we won't shoot you. We'll pretend we lost you. We'll let you go. Warner only wants the girl."
Adam is breathing hard. He grips the gun in his hand, pops his head out for a split second, and fires. Someone falls to the floor, screaming.
"Ah, Kent! You son of a—"
Adam uses the moment to run. We jump out from behind the desk and fly toward a stairwell. Gunshots miss us by millimeters. I wonder if these two men are the only ones who followed us inside. The spiral staircase winds into a lower level, a basement of some kind. Someone is trying to aim for Adam, but our erratic movements make it almost impossible. The chance of him hitting me instead are too high. He's unleashing a mass of expletives in our wake. Adam knocks things over as we run, trying to create any kind of distraction, any kind of hazard to slow down the soldier behind us. I spot a pair of storm cellar doors and realize this area must have been ravaged by tornadoes. The weather is turbulent. Natural disasters are common. Cyclones must have ripped this city apart.
"Adam!"
I tug on his arm. We hide behind a low wall. I point to our only possible escape route. He squeezes my hand.
"Good eye."
But we don't move until the air shifts around us. A misstep, a muffled cry. It's almost blindingly black down here. It's obvious the electricity was disconnected a long time ago. The soldier has tripped on one of the obstacles Adam left behind. Adam holds the gun close to his chest, takes a deep breath, turns, and takes a swift shot. His aim is excellent. An uncontrolled explosion of curse words confirms it. Adam takes a hard breath.
"I'm only shooting to disable,"
he says.
"Not to kill."
"I know," I tell him, though I wasn't sure. We run for the doors, and Adam struggles to pull the latch open. It's nearly rusted shut. We're getting desperate. I don't know how long it'll be until we're discovered by another set of soldiers. I'm about to suggest we shoot it open when Adam finally manages to break it free. He kicks open the doors, and we stumble out onto the street. There are 3 cars to choose from. I'm so happy I could cry.
"It's about time," he says. But it's not Adam who says it.
Chapter 39. There's blood everywhere. Adam is on the ground, clutching his body. But I don't know where he's been shot. There are soldiers swarming around him, and I'm clawing at the arms holding me back, kicking the air, crying out into the emptiness. Someone is dragging me away, and I can't see what they've done to Adam. Pain is seizing my limbs, cramping my joints, breaking every single bone in my body. I want to shriek through the sky. I want to fall to my knees and sob into the earth. I don't understand why the agony isn't finding escape in my screams, why my mouth is covered with someone else's hands.
"If I let you go, you have to promise not to scream," he says to me.
He's touching my face with his bare hands, and I don't know where I dropped my gun. Warner drags me into a still-functioning building and kicks open a door. Hits a switch. Fluorescent lights flicker on with a dull hum. There are paintings taped to the walls, alphabet rainbows stapled to cork boards, small tables scattered across the room. We're in a classroom. I wonder if this is where James goes to school. Warner drops his hand. His glassy green eyes are so delighted, I'm petrified.
God, I missed you, he says to me. You didn't actually think I'd let you go so easily.
You shot Adam, are the only words I can think of. My mind is muddled with disbelief. I keep seeing his beautiful body crumpled on the ground, red, red, red. I need to know if he's alive. He has to be alive. Warner's eyes flash.
Kent is dead.
No! Warner backs me into a corner, and I realize I've never been so defenseless in my life. Never so vulnerable. 17 years I spent wishing my curse away, but in this moment I'm more desperate than ever to have it back. Warner's eyes warm unexpectedly. His constant shifts in emotion are difficult to anticipate, difficult to counter.
Juliet, he says.
He touches my hand so gently it startles me.
Did you notice? It seems I am immune to your gift.
He studies my eyes.
Isn't that incredible? Did you notice?
He asks again.
When you tried to escape, did you feel it?
Warner, who misses absolutely nothing. Warner, who absorbs every single detail. Of course he knows. But I'm shocked by the tenderness in his voice, the sincerity with which he wants to know. He's like a feral dog, crazed and wild, thirsty for chaos, simultaneously aching for recognition and acceptance. Love.
We can really be together,
he says to me, undeterred by my silence. He pulls me close, too close. I'm frozen in 500 layers of fear, stunned in grief, in disbelief. His hands reach for my face, his lips for mine. My brain is on fire, ready to explode from the impossibility of this moment. I feel like I'm watching it happen, detached from my own body, incapable of intervening. More than anything else, I'm shocked by his gentle hands, his earnest eyes.
I want you to choose me, he says. I want you to choose to be with me. I want you to want this.
You're insane, I choke. You're psychotic.
You're only afraid of what you're capable of.
His voice is soft, easy, slow, deceptively persuasive. I'd never realized before just how attractive his voice is.
Admit it, he says. We're perfect for each other. You want the power. You love the feel of a weapon in your hand. You're attracted to me.
I try to swing my fist, but he catches my arms, pins them to my sides, presses me up against the wall. He's so much stronger than he looks.
Don't lie to yourself, Juliet. You're going to come back with me, whether you like it or not. But you can choose to want it. You can choose to enjoy it.
I will never. I breathe. Broken. You're sick. You're a sick, twisted monster.
That's not the right answer,
he says, and seems genuinely disappointed. It's the only answer you'll ever get from me. His lips come too close.
But I love you.
No, you don't. His eyes close. He leans his forehead against mine.
You have no idea what you do to me.
I hate you. He shakes his head very slowly, dips down. His nose brushes the nape of my neck, and I stifle a horrified shiver that he misunderstands. His lips touch my skin, and I actually whimper.
God, I'd love to just take a bite out of you.
I notice the gleam of silver in his inside jacket pocket. I feel a thrill of hope, a thrill of horror. Brace myself for what I need to do, spend a moment mourning the loss of my dignity. And I relax. He feels the tension seep out of my limbs and responds in turn. He smiles, loosens his clamp on my shoulders, slips his arms around my waist. I swallow the vomit threatening to give me away. His military jacket has a million buttons, and I wonder how many I'll have to undo before I can get my hands on the gun. His hands are exploring my body, slipping down my back to feel the form of my figure, and it's all I can do to keep from doing something reckless. I'm not skilled enough to overpower him, and I have no idea why he's able to touch me. I have no idea why I was able to crash through concrete yesterday. I have no idea where that energy came from. Today, he's got every advantage, and it's not time to give myself away. Not yet. I place my hands on his chest. He presses me into the curve of his body, tilts my chin up to meet his eyes. "I'll be good to you," he whispers. "I'll be so good to you, Juliet, I promise." I hope I'm not visibly shaking. And he kisses me, hungrily, desperately, eager to break me open and taste me. I'm so stunned, so horrified, so cocooned in insanity I forget myself. I stand there frozen, disgusted. My hands slip from his chest. All I can think about is Adam and blood and Adam and the sound of gunshots. And Adam lying in a pool of blood, and I nearly shove him off me. But Warner will not be discouraged. He breaks the kiss, whispers something in my ear that sounds like nonsense, cups my face in his hands, and this time I remember to pretend. I pull him closer, grab a fistful of his jacket, and kiss him as hard as I can, my fingers already attempting to release the first of his buttons. Warner grips my hips and allows his hands to conquer my body. He tastes like peppermint, smells like gardenias. His arms are strong around me, his lips soft, almost sweet against my skin. There's an electric charge between us I hadn't anticipated. My head is spinning. His lips are on my neck, tasting me, devouring me, and I force myself to think straight. I force myself to understand the perversion of this situation. I don't know how to reconcile the confusion in my mind, my hesitant repulsion, my inexplicable chemical reaction to his lips. I need to get this over with, now. I reach for his buttons, and he's unnecessarily encouraged. Warner lifts me by the waist, hoists me up against the wall, his hands cupping my backside, forcing my legs to wrap around him. He doesn't realize he's given me the perfect angle to reach into his coat. His lips find my lips. His hands slip under my shirt, and he's breathing hard, tightening his grip around me, and I practically rip open his jacket in desperation. I can't let this go on much longer. I have no idea how far Warner wants to push things, but I can't keep encouraging his insanity. I need him to lean forward, just an inch more. My hands wrap around the gun. I feel him freeze, pull back. I watch his face phase through frames of confusion, dread, anguish, horror, anger. He drops me to the floor just as my fingers pull the trigger for the very first time. The power and strength of the weapon is disarming. The sound so much louder than I anticipated. The reverberations are vibrating through my ears and every pulse in my body. It's a sweet sort of music, a small sort of victory. Because this time, the blood is not Adam's. Chapter 40. Warner is down. I am up and running away with his gun. I need to find Adam. I need to steal a car. I need to find James and Kenji. I need to learn how to drive. I need to drive us to safety. I need to do everything in exactly that order. Adam can't be dead. Adam is not dead. Adam will not be dead. My feet slap the pavement to a steady rhythm, my shirt and face splattered with blood, my hands still shaking slightly in the setting sun. A sharp breeze whips around me, jolting me out of the crazed reality I seem to be swimming in.
I take a hard breath, squint up at the sky, and realize I don't have much time before I lose the light. The streets, at least, have long since been evacuated, but I have exactly zero idea where Warner's men might be. I wonder if Warner has the tracker serum as well. I wonder if they'd know if he were dead. I duck into dark corners, try to read the streets for clues, try to remember where Adam fell to the ground, but my memory is too weak, too distracted, my brain too broken to process these kinds of details. That horrible instant is one mess of insanity in my mind. I can't make any sense of it, and Adam could be anywhere by now. They could have done anything to him. I don't even know what I'm looking for. I might be wasting my time. I hear sudden movement and dart into a side street, my fingers tightening around the weapon slick in my grip. Now that I've actually fired a gun, I feel more confident with it in my hands, more aware of what to expect, how it functions. But I don't know if I should be happy or horrified that I'm so comfortable so quickly with something so lethal. Footsteps. I slide up against the wall, my arms and legs flat against the rough surface. I hope I'm buried in the shadows. I wonder if anyone's found Warner yet. I watch a soldier walk right past me. He has rifles slung across his chest, a smaller sort of automatic weapon in his hands. I glance down at the gun in my own hand and realize I have no idea how many different kinds there are. All I know is some are bigger than others. Some have to be reloaded constantly. Some, like the one I'm holding, do not. Maybe Adam can teach me the differences. Adam. I suck in my breath and move as stealthily as I can through the streets. I spot a particularly dark shadow on a stretch of the sidewalk ahead of me and make an effort to avoid it. But as I get closer, I realize it's not a shadow. It's a stain. Adam's blood. I squeeze my jaw shut until the pain scares away the screams. I take short, tiny, too quick breaths. I need to focus. I need to use this information. I need to pay attention. I need to follow the trail of blood. Whoever dragged Adam away still hasn't come back to clean the mess. There's a steady spatter drip that leads away from the main roads and into the poorly lit side streets. The light is so dim I have to bend down to search for the spots on the ground. I'm losing sight of where they lead. There are fewer here. I think they've disappeared entirely. I don't know if the dark spots I'm finding are blood or old gum pounded into the pavement or drops of life from another person's flesh. Adam's path has disappeared. I back up several steps and retrace the line. I have to do this 3 times before I realize they must have taken him inside. There's an old steel structure with an older rusted door that looks like it's never been opened. It looks like it hasn't been used in years. I don't see any other options. I wiggle the handle. It's locked. I shift my entire weight into breaking it open, slamming it open, but I've only managed to bruise my body. I could shoot it down like I've seen Adam do, but I'm not certain of my aim nor my skill with this gun, and I'm not sure I can afford the noise. I can't make my presence known. There has to be another way into this building. There is no other way into this building. My frustration is escalating. My desperation is crippling. My hysteria is threatening to break me, and I want to scream until my lungs collapse. Adam is in this building. He has to be in this building. I am standing right outside this building, and I can't get inside. This can't be happening. I clench my fists, try to beat back the maddening futility enveloping me in its embrace, but I feel crazed, wild, insane. The adrenaline is slipping away. My focus is slipping away. The sun is setting on the horizon, and I remember James and Kenji and Adam, and Warner's hands on my body, and his lips on my mouth, and his tongue tasting my neck. And all the blood. Everywhere. 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 And I do something stupid. I punch the door. In one instant, my mind catches up to my muscle and I brace myself for the impact of steel on skin, ready to feel the agony of shattering every bone in my right arm. But my fist flies through 12 inches of steel like it's made of butter. I'm stunned. I harness the same volatile energy and kick my foot through the door. I use my hands to rip the steel to shreds, clawing my way through the metal like a wild animal. It's incredible, exhilarating, completely feral. This must be how I broke through the concrete in Warner's torture chamber. Which means I still have no idea how I broke through the concrete in Warner's torture chamber. I climb through the hole I've created and slip into the shadows. It's not hard. The entire place is cloaked in darkness. There are no lights, no sounds of machines or electricity, just another abandoned warehouse left to the elements. I check the floors, but there's no sign of blood. My heart soars and plummets at the same time. I need him to be okay. I need him to be alive. Adam is not dead. He can't be. Adam promised James he'd come back for him. He'd never break that promise. I move slowly at first, wary, worried that there might be soldiers around, but it doesn't take long for me to realize there's no sound of life in this building. I decide to run. I tuck caution in my pocket and hope I can reach for it if I need to. I'm flying through doors, spinning around turns, drinking in every detail. This building wasn't just a warehouse, it was a factory. Old machines clutter the walls. Conveyor belts are frozen in place. Thousands of boxes of inventory stacked precariously in tall heaps. I hear a small breath, a stifled cough. I'm bolting through a set of swinging double doors, searching out the feeble sound, fighting to focus on the tiniest details. I strain my ears and hear it again. Heavy, labored breathing. The closer I get, the more clearly I can hear him. It has to be him. My gun is up and aimed to fire, my eyes careful now, anticipating attackers. My legs move swiftly, easily, silently. I nearly shoot a shadow the boxes have cast on the floor. I take a steadying breath, round another corner, and nearly collapse. Adam is hanging from bound wrists, shirtless, bloodied and bruised everywhere. His head is bent, his neck limp, his left leg drenched in blood despite the tourniquet wrapped around his thigh. I don't know how long the weight of his entire body has been hanging from his wrists. I'm surprised he hasn't dislocated his shoulders. He must still be fighting to hold on. The rope wrapped around his wrists is attached to some kind of metal rod running across the ceiling. I look more closely and realize the rod is part of a conveyor belt. That Adam is on a conveyor belt. That this isn't just a factory. It's a slaughterhouse. I'm too poor to afford the luxury of hysteria right now. I need to find a way to get him down, but I'm afraid to approach. My eyes search the space, certain that there are guards around here somewhere, soldiers prepared for this kind of ambush. But then it occurs to me that perhaps I was never really considered a threat. Not if Warner managed to drag me away. No one would expect to find me here. I climb onto the conveyor belt, and Adam tries to lift his head. I have to be careful not to look too closely at his wounds, not to let my imagination cripple me. Not here, not now. Adam? His head snaps up with a sudden burst of energy. His eyes find me. His face is almost unscathed. There are only minor cuts and bruises to account for. Focusing on the familiar gives me a modicum of calm.
Juliet?
I need to cut you down.
Jesus, Juliet. How did you find me?
He coughs, wheezes, takes a tight breath. Later. I reach up to touch his face. I'll tell you everything later. First, I need to find a knife.
My pants.
What?
In.
He swallows.
In my pants.
I reach for his pocket and he shakes his head. I look up. Where?
There's an inside pocket in my pants.
I practically rip his clothes off.
There's a small pocket sewn into the lining of his cargo pants. I slip my hand inside and retrieve a compact pocket knife, a butterfly knife. I've seen these before. They're illegal. I start stacking boxes on the conveyor belt, climb my way up, and hope to God I know what I'm doing. The knife is extremely sharp, and it works quickly to undo the bindings. I realize a little belatedly that the rope holding him together is the same cord we used to escape. Adam is cut free. I'm climbing down, refolding the knife and tucking it into my pocket. I don't know how I'm going to get Adam out of here. His wrists are rubbed raw, bleeding. His body pounded into one piece of pain. His leg bloodied through with a bullet. He nearly falls over. I try to hold on as tenderly as possible, try to hold him close as best I can without hurting him. He doesn't say a word about the pain. Tries so hard to hide the fact that he's having trouble breathing. He's wincing against the torture of it all, but doesn't whisper a word of complaint.
"I can't believe you found me,"
is all he says. And I know I shouldn't. I know now isn't the time. I know it's impractical, but I kiss him anyway. "You are not going to die," I tell him. "We are going to get out of here. We are going to steal a car, we are going to find James and Kenji, and then we're going to get safe." He stares at me.
"Kiss me again,"
he says. And I do. It takes a lifetime to make it back to the door. Adam has been buried deep in the recesses of this building, and finding our way to the front is even more difficult than I expected. Adam is trying so hard, moving as fast as he can, but he still isn't fast at all.
"They said Warner wanted to kill me himself,"
he explains.
"That he shot me in the leg on purpose, just to disable me. It gave him a chance to drag you away and come back for me later. Apparently his plan was to torture me to death."
He winces.
"He said he wanted to enjoy it, didn't want to rush through killing me."
A hard laugh. A short cough. His hands on my body, his hands on my body, his hands on my body. "So they just tied you up and abandoned you here?"
"They said no one would ever find me. They said the building is made entirely of concrete and reinforced steel and no one can break in. Warner was supposed to come back for me when he was ready."
He stops, looks at me.
"God, I'm so happy you're okay."
I offer him a smile, try to keep my organs from falling out, hope the holes in my head aren't showing. He pauses when we reach the door. The metal is a mangled mess. It looks like a wild animal attacked it and lost.
"How did you?"
"I don't know," I admit, try to shrug, be indifferent. "I just punched it."
"You just punched it?"
"And kicked it a little." He's smiling, and I want to sob into his arms. I have to focus on his face. I can't let my eyes digest the travesty of his body. "Come on," I tell him. "Let's go do something illegal." I leave Adam in the shadows and dart up to the edge of the main road, searching for abandoned vehicles. We have to travel up 3 different side streets until we finally find one. "How are you holding up?" I ask him, afraid to hear the answer. He presses his lips together, does something that looks like a nod.
"Okay."
That's not good. "Wait here." It's pitch black, not a single street lamp in sight. This is good. Also bad. It gives me an extra edge, but makes me extra vulnerable to attack. I have to be careful. I tiptoe up to the car. I'm fully prepared to smash the glass open, but check the handle first, just in case. The door is unlocked. The keys are in the ignition. There's a bag of groceries in the back seat. Someone must have panicked at the sound of the alarm and unexpected curfew. They must have dropped everything and run for cover. Unbelievable. This would be absolutely perfect if I had any idea how to drive. I run back for Adam and help him hobble into the passenger side. As soon as he sits down, I can tell just how much pain he's in. Bending his body in any way at all, putting pressure on his ribs, straining his muscles.
"It's okay,"
he tells me. He lies to me.
I can't stand on my feet for much longer.
I reach into the back and rummage through the grocery bags. There's real food inside, not just strange bouillon cubes designed to go into automats, but fruit and vegetables. Even Warner never gave us bananas. I hand the yellow fruit to Adam. Eat this.
I don't think I can eat.
He pauses, stares at the form in his hands.
Is this what I think it is?
I think so. We don't have time to process the impossibility. I peel it open for him, encourage him to take a small bite. I hope it's a good thing. I hear bananas have potassium. I hope he can keep it down. I try to focus on the machine under my feet.
How long do you think we'll have until Warner finds us?
Adam asks. I take a few bites of oxygen. I don't know. A pause.
How did you get away from him?
I'm staring straight out the windshield when I answer. I shot him.
No.
Surprise. Awe. Amazement. I show him Warner's gun. It has a special engraving in the hilt. Adam is stunned.
So he's dead?
I don't know, I finally admit, ashamed. I drop my eyes, study the grooves in the steering wheel. I don't know for sure. I took too long to pull the trigger. It was stiffer than I expected it to be, harder to hold the gun between my hands than I'd imagined. Warner was already dropping me when the bullet flew into his body. I was aiming for his heart. I hope to God I didn't miss. We're both too quiet. Adam?
Yeah.
I don't know how to drive. Chapter 41.
You're lucky this isn't a stick shift.
He tries to laugh. Stick shift?
Manual transmission.
What's that?
A little more complicated.
I bite my lip. Do you remember where we left James and Kenji? I don't even want to consider the possibility that they've moved, been discovered, anything. I can't fathom the idea.
Yes.
I know he's thinking exactly what I'm thinking. How do I get there? Adam tells me the right pedal is for gas, the left is to brake. I have to shift into D for drive. I use the steering wheel to turn. There are mirrors to help see behind me. I can't turn on my headlights and will have to rely on the moon to light my way. I turn on the ignition, press the brake, shift into drive. Adam's voice is the only navigation system I need. I release the brake, press the gas, nearly crash into a wall. This is how we finally get back to the abandoned building. Gas, brake, gas, brake. Too much gas, too much brake. Adam doesn't complain, and it's almost worse. I can only imagine what my driving is doing for his injuries. I'm grateful that at least we're not dead. Not yet. I don't know why no one has spotted us. I wonder if maybe Warner really is dead. I wonder if everything is in chaos. I wonder if that's why there are no soldiers in this city. They've all disappeared. I think. I almost forget to put the car in park when we reach the vaguely familiar broken building. Adam has to reach over and do it for me. I help him transition into the back seat, and he asks me why. Because I'm making Kenji drive, and I don't want your brother to have to see you like this. It's dark enough that he won't see your body. I don't think he should have to see you hurt. He nods after an infinite moment.
Thank you.
And I'm running toward the broken building, pulling the door open. I can only barely make out two figures in the dark. I blink, and they come into focus. James is asleep with his head in Kenji's lap. The duffel bags are open, cans of food discarded on the floor. They're okay. Thank God they're okay. I could die of relief. Kenji pulls James up and into his arms, struggling a little under the weight. His face is smooth, serious, unflinching. He doesn't smile. He doesn't say anything stupid. He studies my eyes like he already knows,
like he already understands why it took us so long to get back, like there's only one reason why I must look like hell right now, why I have blood all over my shirt, probably on my face, all over my hands. How is he? And I nearly lose it right there. I need you to drive. He takes a tight breath, nods several times. My right leg is still good, he says to me. But I don't think I'd care even if it weren't. We need to get to his safe place, and my driving isn't going to get us anywhere. Kenji settles a sleeping James into the passenger side, and I'm so happy he's not awake for this moment. I grab the duffel bags and carry them to the back seat. Kenji slides in front, looks in the rearview mirror. Good to see you alive, Kent. Adam almost smiles, shakes his head.
Thank you for taking care of James. You trust me now?
A small sigh.
Maybe.
I'll take a maybe. He grins, turns on the car.
Let's get the hell out of here.
Adam is shaking. His bare body is finally cracking under the cold weather, the hours of torture, the strain of holding himself together for so long. I'm scrambling through the duffel bags, searching for a coat, but all I find are shirts and sweaters. I don't know how to get them on his body without causing him pain. I decide to cut them up. I take the butterfly knife to a few of his sweaters and slice them open, draping them around his figure like a blanket. I glance up. Kenji, does this car have a heater?
It's on, but it's pretty crappy. It's not working very well.
How much longer until we get there?
Not too much.
Have you seen anyone that might be following us?
No.
He pauses.
It's weird. I don't understand why no one has noticed a car flying through these streets after curfew. Something's not right.
I know. And I don't know what it is, but obviously my tracker serum isn't working.
Either they really just don't give a shit about me, or it's legit not working, and I don't know why.
A tiny detail sits on the outskirts of my consciousness. I examine it. Didn't you say you slept in a shed that night you ran away?
Yeah, why?
Where was it? He shrugs.
I don't know. Some huge field. It was weird. Crazy shit growing in that place. I almost ate something I thought was fruit before I realized it smelled like ass.
My breath catches. It was an empty field? Barren? Totally abandoned?
Yeah.
The nuclear field,
Adam says, a dawning realization in his voice.
What nuclear field?
Kenji asks. I take a moment to explain.
Holy crap! Kenji grips the steering wheel. So I could have died, and I didn't?
I ignore him. But then how did they find us? How did they figure out where you live?
I don't know.
Adam sighs, closes his eyes.
Maybe Kenji is lying to us.
Come on, man, what the hell?
Or,
Adam interrupts.
Maybe they bought out Benny.
No, I gasp.
It's possible.
We're all silent for a long moment. I try to look out the window, but it's very nearly useless. The night sky is a vat of tar suffocating the world around us. I turn to Adam and find him with his head tilted back, his hands clenched, his lips almost white in the blackness. I wrap the sweaters more tightly around his body. He stifles a shudder. Adam. I brush a strand of hair away from his forehead. His hair has gotten a little long, and I realize I've never really paid attention to it before. It's been cropped short since the day he stepped into my cell. I never would have thought his dark hair would be so soft, like melted chocolate. I wonder when he stopped cutting it. He flexes his jaw, pries his lips open, lies to me over and over again.
I'm okay.
Kenji.
5 minutes, I promise. I'm trying to gun this thing.
I touch his wrists, trace the tender skin with my fingertips, the bloodied scars. I kiss the palm of his hand.
He takes a broken breath. "You're going to be okay," I tell him. His eyes are still closed. He tries to nod.
"Why didn't you tell me you two were together?"
Kenji asks unexpectedly. His voice is even, neutral.
"What?"
Now is not the time to be blushing. Kenji sighs. I catch a glimpse of his eyes in the rearview mirror. The swelling is almost completely gone. His face is healing.
"I'd have to be blind to miss something like that. I mean, hell, just the way he looks at you. It's like the guy has never seen a woman in his life, like putting food in front of a starving man and telling him he can't eat it."
Adam's eyes fly open. I try to read him, but he won't look at me.
"Why didn't you just tell me?" Kenji says again.
"I never had a chance to ask,"
Adam answers. His voice is less than a whisper. His energy levels are dropping too fast. I don't want him to have to talk. He needs to conserve his strength.
"Wait, are you talking to me or her?"
Kenji glances back at us. "We can discuss this later," I try to say, but Adam shakes his head.
"I told James without asking you. I made an assumption."
He stops.
"I shouldn't have. You should have a choice. You should always have a choice. And it's your choice if you want to be with me."
"Hey, so I'm just gonna pretend like I can't hear you guys anymore, okay?"
Kenji makes a random motion with his hand.
"Go ahead and have your moment."
But I'm too busy studying Adam's eyes, his soft, soft lips, his furrowed brow. I lean into his ear, lower my voice, whisper the words so only he can hear me. "You're going to get better," I promise him. "And when you do, I'm going to show you exactly what choice I've made. I'm going to memorize every inch of your body with my lips." He exhales suddenly, shaky, uneven, swallows hard. His eyes are burning into me. He looks almost feverish, and I wonder if I'm making things worse. I pull back, and he stops me. Rests his hand on my thigh.
"Don't go,"
he says.
"Your touch is the only thing keeping me from losing my mind."
Chapter 42.
We're here, and it's nighttime, so according to my calculations, we must not have done anything stupid.
Kenji shifts into park. We're underground again in some kind of elaborate parking garage. One minute we were above ground, the next we've disappeared into a ditch. It's next to impossible to locate, much less to spot in the darkness. Kenji was telling the truth about this hideout. I've been busy trying to keep Adam awake for the past few minutes. His body is fighting exhaustion, blood loss, hunger, a million different points of pain. I feel so utterly useless.
"Adam has to go straight to the medical wing," Kenji announces.
"They have a medical wing?" My heart is parasailing in the springtime. Kenji grins.
"This place has everything. It will blow your goddamn mind."
He hits a switch on the ceiling. A faint light illuminates the old sedan. Kenji steps out the door.
"Wait here. I'll get someone to bring out a stretcher."
"What about James?"
"Oh..."
Kenji's mouth twitches.
He's going to be asleep for a little while longer."
"What do you mean?" He clears his throat. Once, twice. Smooths out the wrinkles in his shirt.
I may or may not have given him something to ease the pain of this journey."
"You gave a 10-year-old a sleeping pill? I'm afraid I'm going to break his neck."
"Would you rather he were awake for all of this? Adam is going to kill you."
Kenji glances at Adam's drooping lids.
"Yeah, well, I guess I'm lucky he won't be able to kill me tonight."
He hesitates, ducks into the car to run his fingers through James's hair, smiles a little.
"The kid is a saint. He'll be perfect in the morning."
"I can't
believe you. Hey, hey, he holds up his hands. Trust me, he's going to be just fine. I just didn't want him to be any more traumatized than he had to be. He shrugs. Hell, maybe Adam will agree with me.
I'm going to murder you.
Adam's voice is a soft mumble. Kenji laughs.
Keep it together, bro, or I'll think you don't really mean it.
Kenji disappears. I watch Adam, encourage him to stay awake, tell him he's almost safe, touch my lips to his forehead, study every shadow, every outline, every cut and bruise of his face. His muscles relax, his features lose their tension. He exhales a little more easily. I kiss his top lip, kiss his bottom lip, kiss his cheeks, his nose, his chin. Everything happens so quickly after that. Four people run out toward the car, two older than me, two older than them, a pair of men, a pair of women. Where is he? The older woman asks. They're all looking around, anxious. I wonder if they can see me staring at them. Kenji opens Adam's door. Kenji is no longer smiling. In fact, he looks different, stronger, faster, taller even. He's in control, a figure of authority. These people know him. Adam is lifted onto the stretcher and assessed immediately. Everyone is talking at once. Something about broken ribs, something about losing blood, something about airways and lung capacity and what happened to his wrists. Something about checking his pulse and how long has he been bleeding. The young male and female glance in my direction. They're all wearing strange outfits. Strange suits. All white with gray stripes down the side. I wonder if it's a medical uniform. They're carrying Adam away. Wait! I trip out of the car. Wait, I want to go with him. Not now, Kenji stops me, softens. You can't be with him for what they need to do. Not now. What do you mean? What are they going to do to him? The world is fading in and out of focus, shades of gray flickering as stilted frames, broken movements. Suddenly nothing makes sense. Suddenly everything is confusing me. Suddenly my head is a piece of pavement and I'm being trampled to death. I don't know where we are. I don't know who Kenji is. Kenji was Adam's friend. Adam knows him. Adam. My Adam. Adam, who is being taken away from me and I can't go with him. And I want to go with him, but they won't let me go with him and I don't know why.
They're going to help him, Juliet. I need you to focus. You can't fall apart right now. I know it's been a crazy day, but I need you to stay calm.
His voice, so steady, so suddenly articulate. Who are you? I'm beginning to panic. I want to grab James and run, but I can't. He's done something to James, and even if I knew how to wake him up, I can't touch him. I want to rip my nails out. Who are you? Kenji sighs.
You're starving, you're exhausted, you're processing shock and a million other emotions right now. Be logical. I'm not going to hurt you. You're safe now. Adam is safe, James is safe.
I want to be with him. I want to see what they're going to do to him.
I can't let you do that.
What are you going to do to me? Why did you bring me here? My eyes are wide, darting in every direction. I'm spinning. Stranded in the middle of the ocean of my own imagination, and I don't know how to swim. What do you want from me? Kenji looks down, rubs his forehead, reaches into his pocket.
I really didn't want to have to do this.
I think I'm screaming. Chapter 43. I'm an old, creaky staircase when I wake up. Someone has scrubbed me clean. My skin is like satin. My eyelashes are soft. My hair is smooth, brushed out of its knots. It gleams in the artificial light, a chocolate river lapping the pale shore of my skin, soft waves cascading around my collarbone. My joints ache. My eyes burn from an insatiable exhaustion. My body is naked under a heavy sheet. I've never felt so pristine. I'm too tired to be bothered by it.
My sleepy eyes take inventory of the space I'm in, but there's not much to consider. I'm lying in bed. There are four walls, one door, a small table beside me, a glass of water on the table, fluorescent lights humming above me. Everything is white. Everything I've ever known is changing. I reach for the glass of water and the door opens. I pull the sheet up as high as it will go.
How are you feeling?
A tall man is wearing plastic glasses, black frames, a simple sweater, pressed pants. His sandy blonde hair falls into his eyes. He's holding a clipboard. Who are you? He grabs a chair I hadn't noticed was sitting in the corner, pushes it forward, sits down beside my bed.
Do you feel dizzy, disoriented?
Where's Adam? He's holding his pen to a sheet of paper, writing something down.
Do you spell your last name with two R's or just one?
What did you do with James? Where's Kenji? He stops, looks up. He can't be more than 30. He has a crooked nose, a day of scruff.
Can I at least make sure you're doing all right? Then I'll answer your questions, I promise. Just let me get through the basic protocol here.
I blink. How do I feel? I don't know. Did I have any dreams? I don't think so. Do I know where I am? No. Do I think I'm safe? I don't know. Do I remember what happened? Yes. How old am I? 17. What color are my eyes? I don't know.
You don't know?
He puts down his pen, takes off his glasses.
You can remember exactly what happened yesterday, but you don't know the color of your own eyes.
I think they're green or blue. I'm not sure. Why does it matter?
I want to be sure you can recognize yourself, that you haven't lost sight of your person.
I've never really known my eye color, though. I've only looked in the mirror once in the last 3 years. The stranger stares at me, his eyes crinkled in concern. I finally have to look away. How did you touch me? I ask.
I'm sorry?
My body. My skin. I'm so clean.
Oh.
He bites his thumb, marks something on his papers.
Right. Well, you were covered in blood and filth when you came in, and you had some minor cuts and bruises. We didn't want to risk infection. Sorry for the personal intrusion, but we can't allow anyone to bring that kind of bacteria in here. We had to do a superficial detox.
That's fine. I understand. I hurry on. But how?
Excuse me?
How did you touch me? Surely he must know. How could he not know? God, I hope he knows.
Oh.
He nods, distracted by the words he's scribbling on his clipboard. Squints at the page.
Latex.
What?
Latex.
He glances up for a second, sees my confusion.
Gloves?
Right. Of course, gloves. Even Warner used gloves until he figured it out. 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 I replay the moment over and over and over in my mind. The split second I took too long to jump from the window. The moment of hesitation that changed everything. The instant I lost all control. All power. Any point of dominance. He's never going to stop until he finds me and it's my own fault.
I need to know if he's dead.
I have to force myself to be still. I have to force myself not to shake, shudder, or vomit. I need to change the subject. Where are my clothes? I toy with the perfect white sheet hiding my bones.
They've been destroyed for the same reasons you needed to be sanitized.
He picks up his glasses, slips them on.
We have a special suit for you. I think it'll make your life a lot easier.
A special suit? I look up, part my lips in surprise.
Yes, we'll get to that part a bit later.
He pauses, smiles. There's a dimple in his chin.
You're not going to attack me like you did Kenji, are you?
I attacked Kenji? I cringe.
Just a little bit, he shrugs. At least now we know he's not immune to your touch.
I touched him? I sit up straight and nearly forget to pull my sheet up with me. I'm burning from head to toe, blushing through my mind, clutching at the sheet like a lifeline. I'm so sorry.
I'm sure he'll appreciate the apology.
Blondie